Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. So as I sit today, I am continuing to read the Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing by Dr. Joy LeGrue. And I want to talk about white history. You know, we always tell black history, but no one talks about the atrocities of the things that happened and how whites saw these things. And so in her book, she has some interesting stories that I kind of want to talk about. But I want to start off with this poem. It's called Strange Fruit, and it's it says Lewis Allen and Billie Holiday. I think it was a song, but it goes like this. Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. Scent of magnolias sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the trees to drop. Here is a strange and bitter crop. And of course we know and we identify this as the lynchings that were going on, and how black people were lynched at the whim of mostly what white women would say black men were doing to them or saying to them, or if they walked on the wrong side of the street. It was just a lot going on. But Ida B. Wells Barnett, in her 1900 article, and this is again in Dr. LeGrue's book, she had an article entitled, it was titled Lynch Law in America, and it describes the laws of the day. And it goes, during the last 10 years, as a new statute has been allowed to the unwritten law, this statute proclaims that for certain crimes or alleged crimes, no Negro shall be allowed a trial, that no white woman shall be compelled to charge an assault under oath or to submit any such charge to the investigation of a court of law. The result is that many men have been put to death whose innocence was afterward established. And today, under this reign of the unwritten law, no colored man, no matter what his reputation, is safe from lynching of the white woman, no matter what her standing or motive cares to charge him with, insult or assault. And I thought that was interesting because it is still true. I think it's being revealed in a lot of social media that white people, white women especially, have that privilege and that thought ingrained in them from generation to generation that they can say whatever they want and they're going to be believed, that it doesn't matter. We've seen that in multiple videos of white women saying that they're going to call the cops, you know, because they want to do what they want to do. As it's been said, white women are the most dangerous group of people ever. Listen, white men may be in the mobs and doing the physical, but white women are saying things and putting those thoughts in their husbands and boyfriends and family members' mind that the black man wants them and the black woman is aggressive toward them, you know, all these things. And none could be further from the truth. But she also goes on to say, she describes lynching in grim detail. This is Ida B. Wells Barnett. And she goes, the world looks on and says it is well. Not only are there 200 men and women put to death annually on the average in this country by mobs, but these lives are taken with the greatest publicity. In many instances, the leading citizens aid and abet by their presence when they do not participate, and the leading journals inflame the public mind to the lynching point with scarehead articles and offers of rewards. Whenever a burning is advertised to take place, the railroads run excursions, photographs are taken, and the same jubilee is indulged in that characterized the public hangings of 100 years ago. There is, however, this difference. In those old days, the multitude that stood by was permitted only to guy or jeer. The 19th century lynching mob cuts off ears, toes, and fingers, strips off flesh, and distributes portions of the body as souvenirs among the crowd. If the leaders of the mob are so minded, cold oil is poured over the body and the victim is then roasted to death. This has been done in Texarkana and Paris, Texas, in Bardswell, Kentucky, and in Newman, Georgia. In Paris, the officers of the law delivered the prisoner to the mob. The mayor gave the school children a holiday, and the railroads ran excursion trains so that the people might see a human being burned to death. In Texarkana, the year before, men and boys amused themselves by cutting off strips of flesh and thrusting knives into their helpless victim. At Newman, Georgia, of the present year, the mob tried every conceivable torture to compel the victim to cry out and confess, but they set fire to the faggots and that burned him. But their trouble was all in vain. He never uttered a cry, and they could not make him confess. And it goes on to say, while black men made up the majority of those lynched, black women did not escape this form of execution. In 1918, a pregnant black woman named Mary Turner was hanged, covered with oil and gasoline, and burned. As she dangled from the rope, a man stepped forward with a pocket knife and ripped open her abdomen in a crude cesarean operation. Out tumbled the prematurely born child. Two feeble cries it gave and received for the answer the heel of a stalwart man as life was ground out of its tiny form. So Dr. LeGrue goes on and says, the typical official account of such atrocities read, death at the hands of parties unknown. It is difficult to imagine anything more deplorable than these senseless acts of violence, which usually went unpunished. However, the following weekly Republican newspaper accounting from the Springfield, Massachusetts on April 28, 1899, reveals a level of white barbarism rarely, if ever, acknowledged in American history books. And it goes, before the torch was applied to the pier, the Negro was deprived of his ears, fingers, and genital parts of his body. He pleaded pitifully for his life while the mutilation was going on, but stood the ordeal of fire with surprising fortitude. Before the body was cool, it was cut to pieces. The bones were crushed into small bits, and even the tree upon which the wretch met his fate was torn up and disposed of as souvenirs. The Negro's heart was cut into several pieces, as was also his liver. Those unable to obtain ghastly relics direct paid their more fortunate possessors extravagant sums for them. Small pieces of bones went for 25 cents, and a bit of the liver, crisply cooked, sold for 10 cents. As soon as the Negro was seen to be dead, there was a tremendous struggle among the crowd to secure souvenirs. Knives were quickly produced, and soon the body was dismembered. Between 1882 and 1967, 200 bills were presented before Congress to outlaw lynching. Additionally, seven presidents urged Congress to end the practice. Each and every time, these efforts were rejected by the Congress, and lynching continued, unabated and unpunished. It was not until 2005 that the United States Senate offered an apology for what it termed domestic terrorism against mostly black people. Now, I know I gave you guys some descriptive, very descriptive incidents, and this is what is in Dr. LaGru's book. And to me, this is white history. You know, a lot of times white people say, well, we should just get over slavery and that, you know, those things happened back then and I'm a nice person. But just as we carry trauma in our bodies from generation to generation, I believe they carry privilege within them, superiority, barbarism. I believe that because there are still white people who believe that the black body is nothing but a commodity. And so just very vividly, Dr. LaGru explained those things. Who cuts off parts of a human body for a souvenir is insane to me. And I'm sure it's insane to a lot of people, but I hope that people will understand we were never the problem. We were absolutely never the problem. We never asked to come to America. We never asked to stay in America. But because we were brought here, the laws enacted said we could do nothing about it. And the white man and the white woman could do as they please. And it's so much in this book. I'm going to read a little bit more, but not today. But I want you to sit with that and think about that and share with your white friends. You know, we talk about black history, but I think it's important for white people to hear their history that they refuse to listen to, because the story of slavery is not just about people picking cotton and being whipped. It's much more about the way that whites responded to blacks, the way that they lived their lives, and the ugliness that they lived with as if it was nothing. Now, to me, that is crazy. That is inhuman. Inhumane, my bad. But, you know, there are white people who don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that story. But it is a story. And if Congress said that that was domestic terrorism, again, I asked you and I will continue to ask you, why hasn't anything been done about it? Why has there not been any reparations for the ghastly and the tremendous damage and trauma that has been placed on the black man and woman? And it goes from generation to generation, just as the barbarianism and the inhumanity of whites. And so I will bring you more information, because even in black history, we know what happened. We hear the same stories over and over, but I think white people need to hear their history and they need to know where they come from. You know, a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, you guys are from Africa where they lived in huts and da da da. And they say, you know, we don't know our history. And for a long time, we didn't know our history. But, you know, the internet is vast and there are more than huts in a continent, you know. And but even white people don't know their history. They know some things, but there's no connection as well. They made it up as they went from here, from what they knew into what they wanted to. And think about this. They call themselves Christian and they were barbarians. They call themselves Christians, but yet they were barbarians. Isn't that interesting? That is interesting. They used the Bible. They took things from the Bible. They took things out of the Bible. So I watched a PBS documentary on the Black church, and it talked about how the white masters used the church for their benefit, of course, to hold down and press down on the slaves that they had. And they even took out verses and scriptures and pages that were not profitable to them. And so think about that. Again, white history. White history. And one of the things that disturbs me the most is I used to buy books and go to conventions where white women were preaching. Yes, Paula White, Joyce Meyer. Yeah, those white women. Paula White, who was calling for the African angels to come and help Donald Trump win. Listen, I was lost, but you know what? I'm found now. I'm found. I was blind, and now I see, baby. Because let me tell you what I will never do, and that is step a foot in a white church. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not until I get me some reparations. Not until they, listen, the whole Donald Trump four-year era told you what white women was all about. It told you what the evangelical whiteness was all about. And so if you're still sitting up under that teaching and that tutelage, that's on you. That's on you. If they harm you anymore, that's on you, because you're listening to a double-minded person. Double-minded in all your ways. You can't be double-minded. You got to love one and hate the other. You can't do both. And that's what I saw for the last 4 years. Double-mindedness. Double-mindedness. Choose one. One is always greater than the other. But it's up to you to decide what you want to believe. But I choose to believe what Malcolm said, what Martin said, you know, in those moments where you just couldn't even understand the atrocities that happened to Black people. You know, people thought Malcolm was this radical. I mean, he was radically thinking, but listen, he wasn't wrong about a lot of things. And so, again, as I say, white history. Know your history. Know where you come from and not what a white person tells you. Again, the interwebs and the internet is there for you. There are books, there are people. Nothing is hidden. Everything has been uncovered. And there are changes happening in the atmosphere, as the pastor used to say. There's some things going on in the atmosphere. Listen, what side of history are you going to be on? It don't matter. It does not matter. But you're going to be on one side or the other. It's your choice. Do whatever you want to do. But listen, don't go back to doing the things that you just heard me read about. Don't believe the hype. Believe what I just told you. You know it's true. The lynchings happened. You saw Emmett Till and the disfigurement. That was only some of the things that were done. Think about that. A pregnant woman had her baby cut out of her. The baby cried a couple of cries and was kicked with the boot of a white man. That is traumatic. So listen, y'all. I'm going to keep giving you some white history, because it's not important as much as what we need to know. It's what they need to know. We know our history now, but we know more of their history than they do. So share this with your white friends. Share these with your white counterparts and see how they react and respond to that. Because if they really are your friends, they'll acknowledge that it was horrible and traumatic, and it should have never been done. But if they don't, be ready. Be ready to let somebody go. Tell them, don't let them tell you to get over it. Don't let them tell you that was a long time ago. Don't let them tell you that. Okay? Believe what you heard. Believe what you just heard me read to you. That's truth. That's white history. And as I always say, don't y'all go around hurting nobody, not even yourself. This is Miss Ruff signing out for The Ruff Life.